Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. A new U.S. Congress takes office this week, and for the first time in close to two decades, it will do so without veteran Eastern North Carolina Representative G.K. Butterfield. Butterfield chose not to seek re-election in 2022 after Republican mapmakers at the General Assembly dramatically altered, some would say gerrymandered, what had been his district. Despite this development and the fact that he remains healthy and vibrant with a lot more energy to give to public service, Butterfield evinces no bitterness at being forced to give up his seat, and recently he was kind enough to take a few minutes out of his hectic last few days in Washington to talk with me about his proudest accomplishments, the many unheralded successes of the outgoing Congress, and his plans for the future as he returns to his native state.
Well, Congressman G.K. Butterfield, welcome to News and Views. Thank you so much for being with us.
And thank you for having me.
So I want to ask you about some of the things of which you're most proud, about your service in Washington. But before we get to that, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about the challenging times we inhabit and sort of the situation in our national politics. I wonder if you have any sort of overarching hopes and or concerns about where things stand at the dawn of this new year.
Well, at the end of this year, I will be ending an 18-year congressional career. So let me begin by thanking those voters in the 1st Congressional District for giving me this enormous, incredible opportunity to serve the people of the district. 750,000 people live in the 1st Congressional District, and it's an honor to go to Washington each week to try to represent their views and to vote according to the priorities of the district. It's been a real honor, but it's also been a challenge. Yeah. It's been a challenge because we are living in a very hyper-partisan political environment right now. And so as I try to navigate through the congressional process, the legislative process, I try to, as best I can, to represent the views of my constituents. It's been an interesting 18 years. I've served in the majority party, served in the minority party, and there are advantages certainly to being in the majority. And so right now, Democrats find themselves going back into the minority, and that's very disappointing to me. But I hope in the 118th Congress, Democrats and Republicans will be able to come together and to resolve their differences and try to compromise more. That's one of my greatest disappointments. Each party is in their respective corners, and neither party is really making any progress in compromise. This institution was founded based on certainly partisanship, but also based on compromise. And so hopefully going forward, good thinking Democrats, good thinking Republicans can come together and reconcile the differences and serve the American people.
Looks like the Republican leadership team will remain similar to what it's been, but there's a new team coming for the Democrats in Congress. I wonder if you could share a moment with our listeners about the new Democratic leader and the team that he's assembled.
Well, we all know there are 435 members who serve in the House of Representatives, and so it takes a simple majority, 218 votes, to get legislation passed. And so the magic number in the House is 218. And so in each election cycle, parties compete for that magic 218. And right now it looks like the Republicans will have 222 and Democrats 213. And that means that the Republican Party will be the majority party in the House of Representatives. It's different in the Senate. We have 100 senators, and so it takes 51 senators in order to have the majority in the Senate. And so in the 118th Congress, Republicans will clearly be in the majority in the House, but Democrats will retain the majority in the Senate. And so that means that the parties must work together because you cannot get legislation passed without bicameral support. You've got to get it passed in the House and in the Senate and to the president's desk. And so I'm concerned about the direction of the country. Partisanship has gone to the extreme. I like to say it has taken root, and there must be change. There must be compromise between Democrats and Republicans because we have so many issues facing our country, so many. You know, I think about the climate crisis and people talk about climate, but we're not doing a lot about it. We talk about the debt and the deficit, and that's looming in the background, and neither party wants to confront the debt and the deficit head on. And so we have that challenge. Let me tell you, we spend probably $4.5 trillion a year as a government, but only take in somewhere between $3.5 and $4 trillion. And so each year we face a deficit. And in order to resolve the deficit, we have to borrow the money in order to balance the books. And so because of borrowing over the years, we now have nearly $30 trillion in debt. And nobody really wants to confront the debt and the deficit crisis. The way you do that, and many of our citizens don't fully understand, that two-thirds of our federal budget is what we call entitlement spending. It's not spending on foreign aid and help for low-income people. It's Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. These programs are driving the deficit. And so each year we have to pass a budget, but we don't address entitlement spending. What we address each year is discretionary spending. We address defense discretionary, non-defense discretionary, but remember, discretionary spending is only one-third of the budget. And so we've got to get ready to confront the budget crisis because it's here.
No doubt about that. It does seem as if perhaps at least over this last 2 years that y'all have made some progress, maybe more than the public realizes in taking on a lot of issues. I guess when you think about where we were 2 years ago at this time and how far the country's actually come, there has been some progress on the deficit, on climate, on foreign policy, on the pandemic. It seems like really, we are at least trending in a better direction than we were 2 years ago. There must be some at least consolation in knowing how much y'all have accomplished just in this last Congress.
The 117th Congress has been the most productive Congress since I have been in Congress over the last 18 years. Working with President Biden, we have forged extraordinary progress for America's working families. We've passed the American Rescue Plan as an example. We passed a massive infrastructure law, and much of that money is coming right here to North Carolina. We've addressed veterans issues, and we passed the CHIPS and Science Act so that we can make it in America and not have to depend on China and other countries for our raw products. And let's not forget the Inflation Reduction Act that we addressed a few weeks ago. The 117th Congress has been productive. The American people should understand that it has been the Democratic majority that has gotten this done. We did very little of it with Republican support. We had Republicans to support us with the American Rescue Plan and a few other important pieces of legislation, but most of this was done with the Democratic majority in the House and Senate. But it has been a historic Congress, and I'm very proud to have been a part of it.
We're talking with North Carolina Congressman G.K. Butterfield, who's retiring after almost two decades of service in Washington and many more in North Carolina state government. I've heard one of the reasons you feel that it was time for you to retire was really maybe it wasn't your choice. It's this gerrymandering virus that continues to infect our politics. We know that might even be one of the main reasons that Republicans have been able to retake control of the House of Representatives, according to a lot of analysis, is that gerrymandering continues to rear its ugly head across our country. It remains a factor in North Carolina. I wonder if you have any thoughts about what the heck we do about this gerrymandering problem. It seems to be a real threat to our democracy in many ways.
Well, every 10 years, the legislature is required to redraw the lines, the boundaries, the district boundaries for the state house, the state senate, and the U.S. House of Representatives. And that gets to be very, very partisan, very political. And as you can imagine, the party in power in the state legislature has the power of the pen. And so they can draw districts as they see fit. The districts have to be equal in size, but there's no formula for directing the legislature how to draw the lines. And so in days gone by, the legislature tried to use whole counties. They tried to use areas on one side of the interstate versus the other side of the interstate highways as means of drawing the districts. But now we have very sophisticated technology, and those who draw maps can draw a map with precision. They know exactly how a household or even the voters within a household are likely to vote in an election. Data is collected on every American every day. When we go to the drugstore, the grocery store, and use the little discount card that we have, when that information is put into the computer, it is collected. It is collected. And when lines are drawn, the legislature depends on this data and other data in order to draw the districts. And so it makes no sense to me that we have a state that is evenly divided between Democrats and Republicans. But 4 years ago, we had a map that was 10-3, 10 Republicans and three Democrats. But thanks to the North Carolina Supreme Court, that has changed. And now we have a 7-7 map, which reasonably reflects North Carolina. The problem is that it's what we call a remedial map. It only survives for 2 years. And so now the legislature will have to come back in 2023 and to prepare and to present another congressional map. And I would hope that my good friends in the legislature, both Democrat and Republican, can come together and draw a map that will reasonably reflect North Carolina. We need a 7-7 delegation in Raleigh. But there's more going on than gerrymandering. The Speaker of the House here in North Carolina, Tim Moore, has a case pending in the U.S. Supreme Court that seeks to remove state courts from any power to review a redistricting map. That is a very dangerous precedent to say to a state like North Carolina, but other states as well, that the courts do not have the power to review a politically, legislatively enacted map. And so we need to watch that case and make sure that the U.S. Supreme Court does not take the country in that direction. The court should always have the power of review. That was Marbury versus Madison years ago. The courts should always have the power to review legislative enactments. But we will know in a few weeks what that case is going to hold.
You yourself, of course, served on the North Carolina Supreme Court, so you know all about judicial review. We're coming near the end of our time with Congressman G.K. Butterfield, but I want to give you a chance to think back about some of the accomplishments you're most proud of during your tenure in Washington and to tell us about what's next for you. You're still a young man. You have lots of service still to provide to our state and country. What's on the agenda for you, and what are you looking back on with the most pride?
What many people really don't fully understand is that legislative work is done at the committee level, the subcommittee level. When it gets to the floor, all of the writing and all of the legislating has been completed. What happens on the House floor, and I would also say on the Senate floor, is simply a ratification of what happened at the committee level. And so my energy, all of my energy has been focused at the committee level. I serve on one of the most important committees in the House. It's called the Energy and Commerce Committee. My committee has jurisdiction over health care, over climate, hazardous materials, energy, consumer protection, and the list just goes on and on. We touch a lot of areas of life. And so I have been very actively involved in my committee. I've taken a lead on many issues, particularly Medicaid expansion. North Carolina is not one of the states that has chosen to accept federal money to expand the Medicaid program, and very, very disappointed about that. I was part of the Affordable Care Act debate. I led the effort on Medicaid expansion and helped lead the fight on Medicaid expansion. Let me not take full credit for it, but Medicaid expansion, I certainly was very much involved with that. What many people may not know is that I also have been a leader on pediatric rare diseases. We have children in our country, thousands of children in our country who suffer from very rare diseases, and there are no medications available in order to address these conditions. And so we have tried to incentivize the pharmaceutical companies and give them some benefits that will allow them to get medicines approved by the FDA so that these medicines can go on the market. But right now, when a pharmaceutical company develops a medicine, they have to get in line. They have to get in line with other medications in order to get approval. And so I've been able to get these manufacturers of drugs to get advanced and to get very quick approval for their drugs. That's a big deal in the rare disease community.
I know there's a lot of people who will be forever grateful for that work. Thank you so much. So what's next? What comes up next for you? What are you thinking about? We'll be occupying your time in the new year. I'm sure you'll remain very busy.
Well, Rob, I am a young 75-year-old. I don't deny that 75 years old classifies one as a senior citizen. I stipulate that with you, but I'm in excellent health. According to the medical professionals, I'm in a good place with my health. I'm very blessed to say that and to have good health. And so I'm not going to go home and sit down and just waste away. I want to get involved with civic activities. I want to continue writing my book. Actually, I'm writing two books. I'm writing one book on my memoirs, and there are many, many stories and reflections that I have included in my memoir, but also I'm writing a book on the history of African Americans in North Carolina, particularly in my home county of Wilson. And so I can spend more time doing that. And finally, I am still an attorney. I pay my bar dues every year. I paid them yesterday for 2023. And so don't be surprised if you don't see me landing with some major law firm in the next few weeks.
Well, that'd be very lucky for them. Congratulations. And just a profound thanks for all your service to our state and our country over the last several years. And we look forward to many more years of it. Thank you so much.
And thank you.
Coming up next, an expert on public school funding in North Carolina joins us to discuss a pair of important and damning new reports. Don't go away.